And no different gonna make any better.
If you want to make a difference, look at yourself and make that change.
And make that change.
See, I can't match your, I can't match your energy and passion, but I love it.
David, football David. The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. It is time now, right smack dab in the middle of summertime. We're going to do at least a couple of things coming up on today's DDFP. One, we're going to continue our review of the tremendous second season available on Amazon Video. Make sure you check it out, All or Nothing NFL Films. We've been buzzing about this, me and my man Brian Baumgartner, over the last couple of weeks, and we will continue to do so. Brian also, though, is going to be in Tahoe in a matter of hours, as a matter of fact, as we preview the Lake Tahoe golf business. And first, let's say hello to Brian. Hello, Brian. How are you?
Hi, Dave. How are you
What
doing?
A pleasure to see you. I'm not as good as you.
You're
about to be glad-handing with all the sports glitterati. And this is also the last chance that most people get to kibitz with the high-end NFL quarterbacks. They show up. Who all is there usually? It's Rodgers.
Alex Smith.
Alex Smith is a perennial. Jerry Rice is always out.
Jerry Rice. You said quarterbacks, though, right?
Yeah, well, I feel like it.
Yeah, yeah. Carson Palmer.
Oh, Palmer's out there.
Palmer's out there. Fitzpatrick was there last year. Who else? I guess, well, and then there's like, you know,
Chaz
Marino and Elway.
And Chaz Barkley is always there. We talked with him a few years ago. Matter of fact, we should play that back, Bartlett, behind the glass. That's always a funny interview. He's like, you Jewish?
Jewish? Yeah. What the hell is a matzo ball?
That was what Chaz Barkley asked me. And yeah, I talked to Steph Curry before he got his first ring, so on and so forth. But I have to tell you, Brian, before, and we're going to talk some all or nothing here, and you know, the great, not great Rams season, but the great documentary about the bemusing Rams season of 2016. Fascinating stuff. But I must say here and now, and I'm not sheepish about it, and how you take this, you know, take as you will, I fell very much in love in Tahoe when I was there 4 years or so ago.
Yes.
He, at the time, wore the number 50 for the Green Bay Packers, but he was number one in my heart after we sang a song that you just heard at the top of the show. And now he's on the phone with us, Brian. It's your pal and mine, AJ Hawk. What's the poop, fella?
What's happening, guys? It's fun listening to you guys, you know, chop it up back and forth. You guys, I'm honored to be on the show today, so thanks for having me on again.
Well, mazel tov, first and foremost. You now have your fourth child, Hawk. You just had number four.
I did, yes. We're pumping them out left and right here in Columbus, Ohio. I just have a five-week-old now, so we're very busy, very fertile, and having a lot of fun. So I love it. I know you have four. I know Brian's about to have two. So we're all just some proud American men just pumping kids out.
Oh, God.
Oh. I mean, what kind of show is this?
It kind of turns me on. God, it turns me on a little bit.
Brian's a ham and egger compared to you and me, Hawk. Four. I mean, really. I warn women, don't even – you might not even want to, like, hey, can you give me a ride? No, you might not – who knows what happens, you know? Who knows at this point? Before we jump into everything, as a matter of fact, this is a question I've been asking a lot of people who paid us a visit here in 66 over the last few months. So now I'll ask you both. Let's rate things, the tiers of what's important to people in the 21st century. Are you ready? I'm going to give you four items.
Okay.
You tell me the one that you put in first position, you can have whenever you want for the rest of your life. Second position, once every 3 weeks. Third position, once every 3 months. Fourth position, never again. You guys ready? Here we go. TV, sex, pizza, booze.
Sex.
Call you, Brian.
Oh, it's me? TV, sex, pizza, booze. TV, sex, pizza booze.
And you could, if like, I think if you raise the stakes a little bit if you change pizza to just all Italian food. That makes it even harder
to
cut.
Oh, man.
No more meatballs, you understand. No more veal parmesan.
I still think for me, it's TV sex pizza booze.
That's how it goes. No booze ever again for you.
I mean, if you're saying all Italian, I mean, the booze and the pizza, those two things, I could interchange those. Yeah, I mean, you know, sex, yeah, I don't need it every day.
Whatever. Right, exactly, especially if you're in the shoes of me or Hawk. It's like it's enough already, you know?
Yes.
Hawk, how say you?
Okay, so I'm going to have to go sex, TV, booze, pizza.
Okay, so goodbye to pizza.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would be booze pizza too.
Hawk,
I think if I'm honest,
Hawk's younger than I am, but get it under control, man. Sex, you need. I mean, TV's there for you through thick and thin. He's there every while you're sitting there holding the bottle for baby or like waiting for baby to wake up from a nap. What are you gonna do? What's a sex? No, you're gonna be watching TV. That's what you need.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, yes, you're right, but. I don't know, man. It's a weird deal. I was going to go off into a little tangent, but I'm going to keep it PG and just say that I want to keep my wife around. I'm trying to get, I've told you before, Damashek, I'm trying to get better looking with age. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get better at everything. And therefore, that is why my number one answer is what it is.
You have the heart of a champion, Hawk. No one would ever deny that. Hey, let me say this, Hawk. Also, mazel tov, and looking forward to hearing you on FS1 this coming college football season. You're going to be calling the Baylor opener with Petros Papadakis, who joins his pal Matt Money Smith joins us all the time here in Studio 66. I just think that is an ideal fit for A.J. Hawk, college football legend, calling college football. I think this is a dream, not just for you, Hawk, but for football fans.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I love it. I actually got to call the Stanford-Oregon State game last year on FS1 with Petros, and that guy is an absolute character and just a pure gentleman. I loved every minute of it, so I'm excited to be working with him on a few games this year to start the season.
All right,
he's hilarious, and also his voice is really, really easy to listen to.
He and I are charged sometimes. I mean, he's a former college football player and, a smarter guy than I. But I've noticed that people in the industry will compare us sometimes. I think purely because we both have swarthy looks and annoying voices. I think that's what it is. Who let these two in?
I would not say annoying. I would say distinct.
Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, but more him. Anyway, I want to say congratulations to you, AJ, on your retirement.
Yes.
And retiring as a Packers. I understand that was a great little get-together you had back in Green Bay a couple months ago, and I just want to congratulate you on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I'm super lucky and very grateful to be drafted by the Packers and spend 9 great years with them before – jumping to Cincy for a little while, and I, man, what an amazing time. I'm still in contact with a lot of those guys, and Brian, I know you're tight with a lot of the guys in Green Bay as well, so you know it's a special, special place.
It really is, and I want to tell a very special story about you and your family. I don't know, Dave, if you know this or any of the listeners out there know this. AJ's dad went to every single NFL game except for one when your mom was sick, right? Your mom had the flu or something, and he went.
Correct.
Yes, and they bought a house right there by Lambeau Field right after he was drafted. And what a lot of you may not know is there is a Hawk pregame ritual before Packers games, which involves shots of alcohol with his dad and a very special toast. And it occurred to me that you never had been there, right? Because you were always playing the game. You had never actually been in the garage, the somewhat heated
garage. It's a funny thing that I've talked with players about. I say, what's that? Tailgating's the best part of football games. And then I realize I'm talking to football players. Oh, yeah, you've never been to a tailgate. You're always about to go into the game. Anyway.
So AJ's dad in the garage in Wisconsin taught me their pregame toast, which I now give to and share with other fans, and I will share with you. They take a shot of alcohol and they raise it before the game, and his dad says, "Stay healthy, play great, just win the game." And when doing that with your dad and your brother, who AJ's brother is just a fantastic guy as well, and is always in Tahoe as well, was a very, very special thing. You have a very special family, so I just I wanted people to know that. And the fact that your dad went to every single home and away game and bought a house so that he could go to all those home games in Green Bay is just really cool.
Oh, yeah, and the funny thing is, Brian, like, I was aware that they did victory, like, their pregame victory shots, but I would just see the videos, and I remember seeing pictures and videos when you got to join him for that. And the funny thing is, like, when, I know when you were there, Brian, I mean, obviously my dad's a big fan of you. He gets all juiced up, and sometimes he had a little more energy. And if you recall, I think when you were there, he gets all pumped up, and he would spike his shot glass into the ground. And yeah. He's a southpaw, too.
Yes, so that's right.
He spikes it really hard, and we always would make fun of him for how unathletic he would look spiking the shot glass.
Yes,
you know, the Shay, right. I have Hawk has been on this show. Hawk has his own, the Hawk Cast, of
yes.
course. It's a great show with some real high-end stars. You should check out the Hawk Cast at your leisure.
Including me.
Oh, you've been as well?
I have been, yeah.
Who was a better guest, Hawk?
Well, you know, Damashek, I think you hold the title for the longest running episode of the podcast.
I thought you were going to say most downloaded, and I was going to be proud.
Yeah, you know, I don't mess with the details, but it was definitely a good one.
Well, either way, so, and I've been on your brother's podcast as well, and but the holy grail for me in the Hawk family is the old man. Hawk always says, oh, yeah, we got to get the old man on the show. But I wait for that day, and I think we should connect your dad with my parents, because at least your dad got to go to Packers games and get to hang around a great scene. My parents, when I was on overnight radio, what from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., would stay awake the entire night to listen to every second that I was on the air.
That's so great.
It's very nice, but it's crazy too.
Well, my parents are probably listening right now. My mom is going, "What's a football? What's a whatever?"
Now, Hawk, the spiking of the shot glass is one thing. Now, somebody might catch a little piece of glass or something like that, but it's probably safe. As opposed to your perennial ritual, are you going to continue tackling a fan in Tahoe this year?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I go back and forth with the guys at NBC throughout the year, and it's like everywhere I go, honestly, if I play golf anywhere, there's always like one or two guys that come up to me and ask me to tackle them, all because of Tahoe.
The stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, and like, you know, how it all came about. Now it's like one of those things where the first year it happened, it was totally organic, and it just kind of came out of nowhere, and it happened, and it worked out beautifully. And then every year it's hard to top that, so we kind of get watered down. At the same time, I'm worried that the kid's going to die with his head smacking off the ground.
I know.
So we're trying to find a way to, like, make it safe but still be something that has an impact. So we're still brainstorming, but we're going to do something out there.
I came across, I don't remember, maybe it was on social media, American Century or NBC, like, tweeting it out. I came across it a few weeks ago. As I start searching for the American Century Golf Tournament, as I start getting more and more excited about being there, and I saw that original hit, and it is just, if you have not seen it, you have to, and you're listening right now, you have to go AJ Hawk, American Century. He just crushes this inebriated fool by the seventh tee box, and it was just unbelievable.
It really is crazy. A professional. Well, you know what? Let me ask you this, and then we will talk some all or nothing here. I promise, fellas. But here's something I contend, Hawk. And I'm half kidding, but the more I think about it, the more I kind of talk myself into actually maybe being able to do this. I've said, and all the guys laugh at me, Ike Taylor, Maurice Jones-Drew, scoff in my face about how I wouldn't survive. If you put me behind on the Dallas Cowboys under center, behind that offensive line and Zeke Elliott behind me and Dez Bryant to catch my passes. Could I, if you gave me the ball, starting at the 25-yard line, could I lead that team on a drive for points against whatever the worst defense in the league is?
If you started on the 25 going in, you could not lead that team to even a field goal. You would run the ball out of field goal range, I think, and they have the best offensive line in the NFL. So, no, damn it.
Why? What would happen? What's going to happen?
You would fumble. You wouldn't even be able to get the court, like the exchange. You would fumble the handoff.
You don't know that.
Are you kidding me?
I would work on it. I would practice for a couple hours before taking the snap, and then most of the plays I would call would be handoffs to Zeke. But then, as we're moving the ball, matriculating it down the field, then once I would say, Dez, this is the one. This is the one. Then play action. Then the defense is sucked in. Damashek goes upstairs to Dez. He goes and gets it. Field goal at worst.
Oh, okay, my bad. I thought you were playing running back.
No. I wouldn't be able to take those licks. I'm not built for that.
No.
I'm from the banks of the Three Rivers. I was gifted the rifle for an arm. I don't have what it takes to be a runner. Come on.
He just awkwardly massaged his arm, by the way. I just want that pointed out.
Well, Damashek, if you found a way to get the ball in the quarterback center exchange, which I question whether that would be able to happen with live bullets coming at you, and you took three knees in a row, then maybe we could bring the kicker on and get an easy three.
I think this, you know what I think this is, Brian? I think NFL players, you know, they're protective of like, yes, pro football is not for everybody. So they shame the devil if you ever put me in there, and I would disprove all of that, and we'd be like, it's not that hard, guys, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's basically the same thing as if Conor McGregor goes and knocks out Floyd Mayweather. That's like you scoring a touchdown with the Dallas Cowboys.
All right, I didn't say anything about a touchdown, but if we did get down to the goal line, that's when Damashek breaks out the naked bootleg, and that's when I dance into the end zone.
He would be killed, right?
Oh, with the Boomer Esiason play thing.
Oh,
that's
amazing.
It. God.
I would love to watch that.
I'd be happy to show it to you anytime you want to see, Hawk. Anyhow, all right, now let's talk about all or nothing. And really, I think Brian and I were talking just before we got you on the phone here. And I think the thing to do is to sort of compare and contrast what the 2016 Rams were versus your experiences in the NFL. And, you know, you obviously spent the vast majority of it in one of the teams that you would call one of the have teams of the league. Stable, generally winning. Did you ever have even a losing season in Green Bay?
2008.
Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, my third year we were 6-10.
Yeah. And that was Rodgers' first year, right?
Yeah, and it wasn't on him. He played well.
No,
we
that's right.
Very poor.
Right.
We played bad on defense, man. We couldn't stop anybody.
So how did that go? Like was there conflict internally on the team between the offense and the defense? Did the defense feel badly? You know what? How did that go? Or was everybody just cool?
Well, I mean, that's why Green Bay is a special place, honestly. I mean, most places, yeah, you can definitely get a rift between offense and defense if one is much better than the other. But in Green Bay, like, we knew, I think as a defense, we felt bad. We felt like we were letting the whole team down when we couldn't stop anybody. When we had Aaron in his first year starting, we knew how good he was from watching him in practice for a couple years and seeing how well he was playing on the field. We were letting him down and letting the whole team down. So no question, there was no rift. It was more, honestly, like, us sometimes apologize and say, hey, we're going to get a stop and try to get some turnovers for you and try to figure this thing out, because it wasn't on them. It was definitely us as a defense.
Right. And so last year, you know, there's this unbelievable NFL Films series, All or Nothing, which looked, you know, it just came out and looks at the 2016 Rams and everything that went down with them. And, you know, one of the things that happens in that show is they start out, or you see in the show, didn't happen in the show, that they start out the season 3-1, right? But even when they were 3-1 at the beginning of the year, their offense was still the lowest scoring offense in the league. So they clearly were having trouble and relying so much on the defense as well. Do you think that starts to grate on you? You know, as a defense having to constantly, you know, make that last second stop at the end of the game or whatever, or, you know, how is that experience?
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. And I'm lucky that I've always played with some great quarterbacks and great offenses, but it definitely, that it'll wear on you. I mean, there's only so long you can hold up as a defense, like where you're literally winning the game for the team, and you have to make, like you say, a last-second stop, or you got to get crazy three or four turnovers a game just to win a game 10-6 or something. Like, those definitely wear on you, and I think you know you're just kind of buying time before the wheels fall off, and that's kind of how as the weeks go. And yeah, like, oh well, we're 3-1, but we literally can't play any better, and we're making crazy plays on defense. I think it definitely, even if it's not on the top of their mind, like they know subconsciously, like, hey, there's no way we can keep this up for 16 games where we're getting four turnovers and holding a team to 40 yards rushing. Like, that's not going to happen every week. So you know the offense has to find a way to step up and put some points on the board, especially how the NFL is now. I mean, you have to score if you want to win. You need a franchise quarterback as well.
What about what was striking to me? I think it's episode 3. I'm not positive. Kenny Britt drops or fumbles a ball away, and he comes to the sideline, and the assistant is like, "Ah, listen, you're not going to do that again. We need your head in the game." But he's despondent. Like, you know, he's on the verge of tears almost. What's better, Hawk? What do you want? Do you want a teammate? Because both sides of it get beaten up by the media and the fans. What actually is the more pervasive reaction? What's the preferred reaction? The guy who is just ruined by stuff, like OBJ punching walls and yelling and screaming and all that kind of stuff, or the guy who's like Jay Cutler, who's like, oh, well. What is more off-putting or more embraceable among in the locker room?
Well, I guess always if a guy looks like he doesn't care, that's what always looks the worst and has bad body language. Like, oh, whatever, I'll figure it out. Like, I'm not really worried. That'll bother people the most, I think. But also, when you go the extreme other way and you're storming up and down the sidelines, throwing your helmet, making like a big public spectacle, that for myself at least is equally as bad. Like, come on, man. Like, I understand you're upset. We've all made mistakes. I used to run the ball back in the day. If I fumbled, I wanted to kill myself. But I wasn't going out there and banging my head on the locker and making sure every single person in the stadium saw me. But I may be sitting there and almost crying because I'm so mad at myself and just want another shot to get back on the field. So whatever it is, if you're authentic, whatever, yeah, do it. But they're putting it on for the crowd. You'll see, like, a good, like, old-school respected coach grabbing back, hey, man, shut up. It's not real. Just get back on the field and stop being a baby. And then it'll shut him up real quick.
Right. But aren't you really, you know, without mentioning names that Dave just mentioned, aren't you really talking about authenticity, right? And believability? Isn't that I think that's kind of what you're saying, right? Like, if you truly believe that this guy is having a response that's real and true to who he is, as opposed to just showing for the cameras or whatever else, right? Like, that's the part that's
100%, man.
Right.
Yeah, be authentic. Be who, whatever you are, be that. And I think guys know that and you'll respect it. And the thing, too, I don't know how the whole series, this Amazon series, worked out, of how many players were mic'd up each game or whatever. What's amazing, too, is how Damashek, they must be a big sponsor of the Dave Damashek football program. This is all we're talking about, this Amazon series. I love it. I know you're a homer to the series, it sounds like.
I'm getting spread thin on the homer stuff, but all right.
Hey, you can cut that out. Don't worry. But the thing is, if you're mic'd up as well, and Damashek, you're a smart man. You too, Brian. Like, you know, when guys get mic'd up, you know without – I read in a book a long time ago that a guy wrote, you know, even if you didn't watch them strap their shoulder pads up pregame with their super talkative, way over the top, super animated, because they want that film to look good, and they want some of them to get picked up on NFL films, and they want people like Damashek sitting on the couch like, wow, this guy's so intense. What an amazing character he is.
That's how I do it. Dude, this guy's intense, Broseph.
Yeah.
Hey,
don't
Hawk.
Mess with him.
Speaking of overly intense, as a matter of fact, that something that is everywhere watching the series is, that, I mean, Greg Williams is number one, but I mean, everybody's a potty mouth. Was McCarthy like that?
No, he's not. I mean, he can be if he needs to for effect, but he never just was crazy like that, cussing all the time. Only if he needed to. I mean, you know, McCarthy, Damashek, you and McCarthy are like, you're basically twins, like that Pittsburgh tough guy mentality.
Yes.
To where you're not going to take any guff from anybody, and we know who the boss is. Like, the second McCarthy walks in the room, you know who runs the show and who drives that ship, and that's exactly how you are. So
yes,
McCarthy, if he if he needed to, yes, but not really crazy. But also, Greg Williams is – that guy's not fake. That's authentic. Whatever you see out there, that is Greg Williams.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's great. If that's who you are, be who you are. That's like we said before.
Yeah.
Like, Greg Williams is not putting on for the cameras. I promise you that.
I believe that. I believe that. He, you know, I mean, there is 8 hours of footage of this thing, AJ. He, and obviously it's not centered on him, I mean, spoiler alert, but he says the F-bomb approximately 90,000 times in the eight.
He never goes more than three words without dropping the F in there.
Never.
I mean, some of those, you got to love some of those, like, he's not old, but I look at him like an old school coach that you don't mess around when you're around Greg Williams. So I respect it, man. That's who he is. He's probably, I don't know anything about his family. I would guess there's some coaches in his bloodline, and he grew up around it, and that's just who he is. So, yeah, you got to love it. And now he's in Cleveland, so they're going to be competing with Damashek Steelers now, and Damashek's probably going to be sitting there crying and wishing Greg Williams never went to Cleveland.
I live in – if you know one thing about me, it's I live in fear of the Cleveland Browns.
The Cleveland Browns.
That's for sure. Who had the pottiest mouth of all, McCarthy, Marvin Lewis, or Jim Tressel?
Wow, that's a good one. Definitely not Tressel, not Marvin really at all. I mean, I guess McCarthy, but not really. None of them, man. I haven't had any head coaches really that were just crazy like that. And like you said, saying the F-bomb 90,000 times in 8 hours. That's not a – I haven't played for many guys. I've had position coaches over the years at different levels that, yeah, that's who they are. And you kind of end up tuning it out, and it's like you don't even hear it after the first day.
Well, I'm fascinated by, you know, and there is clearly a difference between guys who thrive as coordinators or below, but then they don't make it as a head coach. They don't own the room or whatever, as you described, McCarthy and Damashek, for what it's worth, a listener.
And both, Baumgartner,
yeah,
he said.
Well, I mean, he threw you in out of, you know, just to, you know, allow you to maintain some dignity, but he was really talking about Mike McCarthy and Dave Damashek.
Really?
That's what I heard.
I feel like you edited something out.
Well, either way.
Okay.
I feel like a lot of those, you know, so some guys are better off as head coaches than they are as position groups and vice versa. It seems to me, you watch Jeff Fisher, and this isn't necessarily a knock on him, but I remember the Herm Edwards Hard Knocks when he was the Chiefs coach, and he would just walk into different position group rooms, and he would just, like, yell some empty platitudes about, like, come on now, guys, it's not going to happen for you, you got to do it for it, or whatever, and, like, he would turn and walk away, and they'd be like, what the hell was that? But I can't imagine that Bill Belichick is doing that. I imagine he's meticulous about, like, now you are lined up here and then you go here, like that kind of stuff. What was your experience? Head coaches who just talk in overarching platitudes, or guys who get into the nitty gritty of the scheme?
The guys I played for were more scheme guys getting into it, and more like would coach on a. They'd come whenever they saw you mess something up, or they felt like you weren't doing things the right way. They're going to pull you aside, and they're going to let you know that they're not happy with the way you're doing it, and they're going to make sure you get it corrected. But they weren't the guys that walked in, like you say. And that's a perfect Herm Edwards you have there, Damashek, as well, who another guy that plays in Tahoe who's an awesome dude.
He is.
But you just got to know who you're dealing with, and Herm has a ton of respect. It's crazy how – think about a head coach in an NFL team. Every guy on that team comes from – different schools, different upbringings. Like, it's such a diverse group of guys that you have to find a way to get them all playing together. There's so many different ways to approach it. And if you could use – the first thing is, I mean, you just have to earn the guys' respect, whatever – no matter what way you carry yourself as a coach. If you earn the respect, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter. If they know they can trust you, and as a head coach, you're going to shoot them straight and not going to be a guy talking behind their back to the media or to other coaches, then the players will be fine. They'll deal with however hard you are on them.
A couple more things, Hawk, and then we'll let you go. You have a litter of children to tend to, and I don't want to hold you up any longer than we need to. What about celebrity fan? Because I know obviously L.A. That's the thing that they always will do, whether it's a Lakers game and Nicholson and
right.
Beyond. Now it seems like the Rams. I don't think the Rams have exactly sunk their teeth into the zeitgeist of Angelino. Fans just yet, and in fact, here come the Chargers, and that's going to be interesting. But anyhow, they cut to what was the three-way cut? They go Anthony Kiedis looking like Bill the Butcher.
Right.
Then they cut
LeBron.
To Magic Johnson,
okay.
Which makes – okay, those two make sense. Like, Kiedis, we know, the Chili Peppers are L.A. Magic is obviously probably the most popular L.A. athlete ever. Then they cut to LeBron. What gives with that? I didn't care for that move. As a side note, and by the way, Hawk is an Ohioan. That can't sit well with you. But who is the Packers' all-time biggest celebrity fan? Is it, in fact, Brian seated right next to me?
Yeah, but you put it out there, but 100% it's Brian. Brian's been there through thick and thin, and you said it was on a losing season. Brian instantly throws out 2008. He knows. He follows the team, and he's been with us forever. So we'll actually he'll brave the elements as well, so you have to respect it.
God, I love it.
Oh, that's by the way, is a side note. And that's the other thing. The heat that they play in for half the season in the Coliseum has to throw teams that are accustomed to cold climbs. I wonder about that trade if you're like, it's got to be way worse to be a southern team and have to go north and play the Packers in Lambeau than it is for the Packers to come down to L.A. or to Texas and play out there. But either way, we all agree that the reason that the Vikings and the Lions get it wrong is that in the NFC North, it's a home field advantage if you don't have it domed. And by the way, the fans are more engaged because it allows people to feel like they are a part of the battle. If you're sitting up there, it's like you're in a movie. If you're watching with a dome over your head, like with the action play out in front of you. But when you're out there and it's 0 degrees, you feel like you're in it with the players more. No wonder the fans seem to be more engaged than they are in warmer climes. Yes or no?
Yeah, it's like an experience. You get to go there and you feel like you're part of the action, I think. And fans have, like, you have something to talk about for years on the road. Like, oh, I remember I was at that game and 07, that was minus 60 degrees, and then it's like a fishing story where it keeps getting colder and colder.
That's right.
As the years
That's
pass,
right.
And you can tell.
That's right.
You can tell. Yeah, you can impress all your friends at your frou-frou dinner parties in L.A. with all the weird actors. You can say, oh, man, this is nothing. I sat in minus 120 out in Green Bay and watched them beat the Vikings in
That's so Baumgartner.
That 49ers playoff game, what was it, 3 years ago? How cold was it that day? That was like minus 20, right? That was cold.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not cold. I'm just saying, you know, it's like the fish keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Hey, by the way, about that game, are you shocked? Because we have talked about that one before, specifically that particular game, that it was – I think it was 2 years. It would have been 2 years in a row, or maybe two out of three playoff games, where Colin Kaepernick, I just remember him running away from the vaunted Packers defense. The one in the stick was even worse. That was like a revelation.
Yeah.
Watching him like, he's just gliding, and Clay Matthews and company can't catch him. What's going? And then he broke that game. Rodgers took you guys down. You got the lead or tied the game. You guys give it back to Kaepernick. And I just remember on third downs a couple of times on the decisive drive, him just running away from you guys.
No, but wait, I'm gonna stand up for you on that. You're misremembering slightly, because as I remember, on that last drive, obviously players and things happen and you can't expect to do it, but Micah Hyde had an interception in his hands on that last drive to seal it. Am I right or wrong on that, AJ?
Yeah, he did. Micah's a great dude, but yeah, he had one in his hands. He felt horrible about it.
So given that, you know, he was such a revelation, are you stunned that just like a handful of years later, Colin Kaepernick isn't in the NFL?
Oh, right. I see.
I mean, of course, like, it is the one thing, like, I just wish he would come out and speak on it. I feel like he has it's weird. There's so many different opinions, like him taking a stance and all this by taking a knee. Is it keeping him out of the league? I mean, of course it has an impact when a team's thinking about bringing him in. They look at everything, not just what he does on the field, and he hasn't done on the field what he did against us. Like, the Packers, we put him on the map. He played unbelievable against us for multiple years in a row. So, yeah, it's definitely surprising. I wonder, like, do you guys like, Damashek, do you think a team will bring him in maybe after training camp if they have an injury or something?
Yeah,
like, what's gonna happen?
I think that. I think, I mean, first of all, I've said it all through the offseason. If you're the Jaguars, don't you owe it to the rest of that roster? You just bring in Calais Campbell from a winning situation. Don't you owe it to him and all the other, I mean, really nice defensive pieces like we talk about at the top with the offense being lackluster. Don't you owe it to everybody else and to the fans, by the way, to say, like, all right, we went high with Blake Bortles in this pick, and we've given him a lot of rope, but if you come out of preseason and are like, oh, man, this guy just isn't getting it yet, don't you have to go somewhere else? I mean, it would be awful to impose Blake Bortles on an otherwise optimistic situation. But, yeah, I think that somebody gets hurt every preseason, and I suspect Kaepernick will land somewhere. But you, Hawk, love Proud to Be an American. That's his favorite song, Brian. I'm Proud to Be an American.
Right.
So are you down on Cap for doing the kneeling thing, or do you understand the real spirit of what's behind it?
I went through multiple different, opinions, I guess, on how I felt about it. Once I heard him come out and talk about why he was doing it, I'm like, all right, I get it. Like, I get that you want to – or what you're kneeling for. I mean, I would never take a knee during the anthem. Everyone's I mean, the great thing is that he can do that. Like, he's allowed to. That's why America's the best.
That's right.
I wish he would have clarified it maybe earlier why he was doing it, exactly the reason for it. And then now I just wish he would communicate more of what his plan. There's all these stories out there that he wants a starting job and $10 million a year or whatever. And then you hear, like, hey, that's not the truth. Like, whatever it is, I think he should just come out and he didn't need to do a press conference or anything. Do something. Maybe do a sit down with Dave Damashek, like your Barbara Walters, and just explain to us. Take us through your thought process, and I think he could win a lot of people over.
I like that, except that instead of Barbara Walters making the subject cry, I'll weep. I don't even know why, but I bet I will. I don't know why it'll happen. Hey, so we'll let you go, Hawk, but you're a big music guy. I don't want to say their names in case you're private about it, but you love music, a certain kind of music, so much that you name your kids after your favorite musicians, which is pretty cool. Let's play this now, fellas. It's time for the Elimination Chamber.
Elimination Chamber.
All right, here we go. Eliminate one decade of music. You have to eliminate one. 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s. Brian, I start with you. You can never listen to this music again.
90s.
90s. So no Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Pavement, Built to Spill.
Why would you? Well, you have to choose one.
I agree.
You just told me you had to choose one.
All right, I'm just giving. I'm trying to make you feel bad for your choice. I didn't say it was wrong, though.
I mean, the 80s music, a lot of it is really bad. But come on, you gotta, like, you could never hear
Michael Jackson.
You
never hear Thriller.
Madonna.
R.E.M.
R.E.M. Right.
There'd be a lot of big losses.
Early U2.
Yep, that's right.
That would be a loss. Right?
60s, you get rid of Jimi Hendrix. You get rid of the Beatles.
You can't do it. You can't do that. I mean,
you know what? I think that would be the one I would lose. I know, as my, I would be terrible.
And
but
you would have no perspective for what came later.
Well, no. I didn't say it has to be erased from your memory. Like, you would have heard it now.
Oh.
But you're never hearing, you're never going to hear Abbey Road again. You're never going to hear Electric Ladyland again.
You can't do that.
But Led Zeppelin extended into the 70s, so I think you make it a little bit there. Yeah, The Who made some good records in the 70s. I don't know. Let's turn now to – and punk, if you get rid of the 70s, you're getting rid of you never want to hear the Ramones again?
Right.
Their seminal first record? Go ahead, Hawk. How say you?
Well, I mean, I was all on board to get rid of the 60s, but then when you mentioned Jimi Hendrix and the Beatles, see, I don't put them in the 60s. So, like, the Beatles, I
well,
I look at them
where,
as being,
well, that's where they are. You don't get the change.
No, they're current still. Like, the Beatles are still legit. Like, you talk to kids now, and they don't know. They've never heard of the movie Top Gun or anything, but they know who Jimi Hendrix is. They know who the Beatles are. So I don't even put them in the 60s. So 60s, I'll cut that.
You've totally changed the rules of the game.
I mean, I don't consider them that.
I don't even really know the rules of the game, but it seems to me the inherent premise is it has to be gone and you can't hear it anymore, right?
Well, Brian, that's the great thing. Luckily, I've been on this program a few times. I know how Damashek works. I can Jedi mind trick my way into whatever answer you want.
Once in a while, he does. I now sentence you to have to listen to, for that bogus answer, you're now sentenced to listening to George Harrison's I Got My Mind Set on You on repeat for the entire holiday weekend. I got my mind set on you.
Stop it.
All right, before you go, Hawk.
Wait, I have something for him.
Go ahead.
I have something for him. I want you to finish.
Okay.
But I can't let this go because this is coming up that we have our annual caddy race.
Oh, yes. I'm glad you mentioned
it. We have our annual caddy race. They're just a few days away. And what's really not fair, and if you know AJ's brother, Ryan, which it sounds like you do, he's like a triathlete. Right? My caddy is...
He's like AJ if AJ were more together as a human being.
Well, and younger. What is he, 29 or something?
He's 2 years older than me. That's the crazy thing.
Oh, he is? Well, anyway, yeah. My guy is a 45-year-old restaurant owner who... Yeah, he's not doing triathlons. Clay's... Hey. I mean, he's... This whole thing is not fit. We've done this caddy race at the American Century the last 3 years. And now your brother. We have to find a way to handicap him.
Hmm.
I
think that's fair,
Brian. So you what? The funny thing is, people ask Ryan about that, and they're like, "Oh, are you going to win this year?" And Ryan's like, "Yeah, I mean, I hope so." But he tells me that's the thing, Damashek. If you watch these races, so you say, and Brian's caddy Clay, who's an awesome guy, is if he's 45 years old. First off, he's in great shape, but Clay is sneaky fast. Like, he's like one of those guys that's like deceptive 4.4 speed with a golf bag. And all of a sudden, the first year, I know Ryan's like, oh, geez, Clay really got out to a start. And then Clay is rolling. And it was neck and neck the first year. Last year, Clay kind of got tripped up and was finishing a pitcher of margaritas before he got to the green.
That, I think, was the NBC televised television moment of our caddy races. Is they cut to Clay, my caddy, who has fallen down in the sand. It's along the beach and the water. He's fallen down along the sand. Everybody else is finished, and they cut back. As NBC is so good with their golf coverage, they have another camera following just him. They cut back, and he's downing a pitcher of yellow liquid. And the announcer, I can't remember who it was, says, "I don't think that's water." As they cut to commercial. Yeah.
Listen, here's what I think. Here's what I propose. Brian, when the Hawks turn their backs, throw a brick into the golf bag. That evens things out.
Well,
what do you
think about a hip check?
Okay.
I just throw a hip check in.
Is there a rule that says you're not allowed to do that?
There really is no rule.
So there you go.
What do you think?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I kind of self-sabotaged my brother a couple years ago, so they used to do the long drive contest, and I won it a few years, and Corbell is the sponsor, so they gave me, like, this huge Magnum champagne bottle full, and I put it in my golf bag, and it didn't, and, like, Sunday, there's three rounds, the third round, like, midway through the round on Sunday, my brother was getting something out of my bag, and he was like, "Are you kidding me?" And he found, like, that big Magnum bottle, and he lost his mind, like, we almost got in a fist fight out there in the fairway. And I was like, yeah. I mean, yeah, I assume you knew it was in there. It was my trophy. Where else am I going to put it?
Oh, my God. I did not,
that's the best.
I did not realize you were another spray-off cork-throwing champ. I am as well. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're like two of the 10 total champions are right here on the.
Really? You won the long drive as well?
I did. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You won the long drive. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've won the.
No,
I
didn't win that.
I won the spray off years ago, but I've really lacked in the spray. The spray offs killed me the last couple years. I've been dead last.
What's spray off?
So basically, on the pro am day, as you're going from 17 to 18, they have a little. It looks like a javelin court set up with lines and demarcations, and you have to shake a bottle of champagne and shoot the cork out, and see who goes the furthest.
Really?
Yes.
Well, good for you on that victory, but the long drive. What does the one have to hit it to beat out a bunch of pro athletes? How long do you have to go off the tee to 350?
They stopped it. I think I was like when I the last one I won was like 345, but it hit a tower. It would have gone a lot farther. I got screwed.
345.
Well, but it's in Tahoe. But so that I told
and those drivers are bogus. No, man. I haven't been playing golf for a while, but those drivers are bogus. It's everybody.
Right. What are you, Jack Nicklaus, complaining about the new technology?
Yeah, that is, yeah.
That's what it is. It's both. I've played golf in the last decade. I say, give me your bubble driver. I want to see what happens. If you miss the ball, it still goes 240.
Well, up there though, it's the altitude. It does make the ball go further. But I told Dave, AJ, do you remember? You almost killed me, like for real. I was on a 400 yard par four, and I happen to be playing in front of AJ. This is, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, and I'm chipping, and suddenly I hear, boom. And your drive almost killed me on the green. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Of course I remember that because we were standing at the tee box, and you have to usually wait to let him clear the green. And I remember Brian was in front of me, and I start to tee up, and the guy, like the marshals there who are the best, he's like, oh, no, you can't go on the green. I was like, no, don't worry, it's good, I know him. We're all right. And I was like, I told him, if I do hit him, it would be the greatest drive of my life. And I was like, it came off the honestly my club face, and my brother's like, uh oh. He instantly was worried. He's like, oh no. It literally happened to be going right by Brian. And honestly though, Brian, as I was walking up, like the range of emotions I had, at first I was like, oh man, what a drive. Yeah, that's so funny. And then I was like, oh man, that was pretty close. And I was starting to get really worried that you were gonna try to like square up with me when we got to the grid and we're gonna have to duel it out.
If there's one thing you don't need to worry about, it's me squaring.
He's not an insane fan standing there who wants you to tackle him.
Yeah, I'm not.
By the way, and then that really is it. And by the way, the correct thing to do when somebody hits into you is just hit the ball directly back at them. Then they lose their mind. Like, what? I thought that was what we were doing. Hawk, what is talking about? Like, Brian and I understand, not the tangle. Well, I do think I could lead a game points drive. Against a bad defense in the NFL if I had the right pieces around me. But what is the largest animal that you think you could beat in a fight? The question goes to the both of you.
I'll go first. The largest animal. Does this count creatures of the water as well?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I would have to say – see, I have too much respect for any primate, so I'm not taking on any kind of chimp or gorilla, anything like that.
I've learned. I initially said chimp, and now everybody has inundated me with evidence that that would not be a good choice, so I've gotten off.
Don't do it, man. They go for your genitals. They're going for your genitals first. They're going to rip them straight off and eat them in your face.
Wonder how they know that. That's just their instinct. They know to do that.
Eat them in your face.
The family
jewels. I don't know if they do that.
All right.
That's what I tell myself, so I don't mess with. I would never mess with a primate. I mean, but I would say – I'm big into sharks. I want to take on a hammerhead. My little 4-year-old son, we always talk about it. Like, a few vacations we've been on, if we see a shark, he knows. I'm saying, hey, buddy, what do we do if we see a shark? He said, you grab him by the neck and I poke him in the eyes. So I think I'm taking a shark.
Wow, that's bold. And like we've discussed, Cam Jordan of the Saints said, you know, to me, the greatest show of respect that I have for a shark is, even like you referenced McGregor Mayweather, even if it were on my terms, which is to say on land, like the shark fight starts, I don't have to go get him from the sea. I'm saying we're on land. I think he would still beat me because if I tried to get him, wouldn't he just flip over and bite me before I knew it?
Yeah, well, you got to flip. Don't sharks, are they like alligators? If you flip them upside down, do they go limp?
People have told me on Twitter that is the case, that how am I getting him on his back, though, without him biting me first?
What do you mean with those big Pittsburgh forearms? You've been carrying kegs around your whole life.
That's true. All right, listen, Brian, do you have a thought?
I think just a grizzly.
That would be a good fight. You have to go see what was the picture with Leonardo DiCaprio last year?
The big bear. Or the
yeah,
bear.
I don't. After you see that, I don't think you want to tangle with a bear.
No, I got it.
You know how you can handle it?
I will tell you this for sure. I have a better chance against a grizzly than a shark in water for sure. There's no because I would drown and I can swim, but I just think trying to wrestle a large I mean, I'm assuming we're talking an 8 to 10 foot shark.
Yeah. I'm not talking a baby.
Yeah, I mean,
you're
a baby.
Grown man.
Yeah, that would just be ridiculous. Unlike this conversation. But in water, I feel like that would just, that wouldn't go.
Well, and again, it's like, you know, that's McGregor would have a chance if it was like no gloves and MMA rules, but now you're going into the sea on his terms, you would have no chance. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm jumping in a small-ish aquarium with the shark. That's the only way I'm doing it. And I tell my kids, I'm a man of the water. I grew up on swim team. I got a ton of blue ribbons, and that's first place for people that don't know. When I was a little kid,
yeah, I think people were up to speed on that.
And I swam backstroke and fly because guess what? Little kids are scared to try backstroke and fly because it's too hard. So guess what? That's all I entered, and that's where I would win, usually because I'm one or two other kids that could barely even float trying to do that.
Well, you know, the state of Georgia has the greatest swimmers, and I got some blue ribbons there too, my friend. But that doesn't mean I can tackle an 8 to 10 foot shark in the ocean. And now changing the rules to an aquarium, that's like saying, oh, I could beat this said grizzly while it was behind bars in the zoo.
Well, that hawk just changed the rules. He made the Beatles and Jimi Hendrix from 1998 to suit him. You know what? I've had it with Hawk. And yet, you know what? Just because he crossed me a couple of times here in the last 15 or so minutes doesn't mean that we don't love Hawk and that he's not one of our all-time favorites here on the DDFP. And as such, Hawk, I'm happy that you can't see it because you're on the phone, but Brian's here as your proxy. We are happy to announce that you have been inducted into the DDFP Digital Wall of Fame. Your number 50 will hang there for all of time or until the DDFP is canceled in shame. Either way.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. I will make sure I tell all four kids about this, and they will be very proud of me.
And it's a big – and it's a bit – it's your bit, your favorite big orange Bengals jersey. No, it's a Packers number 50.
All right. I'll take it. I'll take it, man. I love it. I appreciate it. It's fun to have you guys both on the show. Damashek, great work getting Brian in. It's always good to have someone to lean on when you stumble through things and you can't figure it out. So I think Brian does a great job with you.
I don't stumble through and try to figure it out. What are we talking about?
I know. Damashek, you know I love you, and you are the Walter Cronkite of podcasts.
powerful endorsement. Hawk. The Hawk Cast. Everybody go listen to it. Hawk at Tahoe. Don't ask him to tackle you. That's for your own sake. Unless he breaks your leg and then he's India for $2 million over the course of the next several years. Then maybe it is a savvy play. Either way, AJ Hawk, we can't wait to hear you calling college football with Petros on FS1 and all the best. Mazel tov on the new edition, and we look forward by year's end to you adding a fifth, I assume, and all that stuff.
Remember, yeah. Thanks, guys.
AJ,
all I need is one shot.
God. AJ,
it's a clutch performer. That's what I always say about myself. Hawk. I'm clutch. What's the point? Why did they invent? Whoever invented this sex business, why'd they do it? It was to make a baby. Well, guess who comes through in the clutch? Damashek. Apparently, Hawk.
AJ, I'll see you soon. The usual wager, I assume.
Yes, let's do it. And maybe we'll even jump in the lake and we'll have a swim-off, Brad.
Whoa!
Let's see. Let me get warmed up.
All right.
You never know.
I'm in.
We're importing a shark for that one. All right, Hawk. Best wishes to you.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, AJ Hawk. Brian, final thoughts on this episode, or should we leave them for the next discussion? Because we did some all or nothing. I really feel like we showed the distinction between the LA Rams, Jeff Fisher of 2016, and some of Hawk's experiences. Do you feel this way?
I do feel this way.
Right.
Yeah, I think AJ offers just such a unique perspective, having, you know, as you say, being on a winning team mostly, but I feel like that 2008, let's just say if the LA Rams can turn around like the 2008 Packers did in the next year or two, they will not feel so bad having gone through this experience.
Except in January when Jared Goff gets hit and he fumbles it in the air and the opponent intercepts it and runs it. That's how that 2009 Packers season ended. Remember? 51-45, one of the craziest playoff games in history. Aaron Rodgers gets hit and remember that?
I do.
Who was that? Darnell Dockett? Who picked that one out of the air? It wasn't Darnell Dockett. I can't think. And the play before that, if you go back and look at it, Aaron Rodgers almost connects with a guy. Was it Donald Driver?
I think it was Driver, yes.
And he would have been gone, and they would have won the game in the next play he gets. Anyway, all right, listen, we'll have time to kibitz about this on the next episode with Brian Baumgartner. In the meantime, good luck out there. Go win the spray off and the long driving contest.
I will not win the long drive. I will not win the long drive.
Well, with that attitude, you won't.
No, that's true.
All or Nothing, check it out on Amazon. Wonderful, wonderful episode. Season 2 there by NFL Films. That's all I should have to say. NFL Films did it. You know it's good. All right, more good stuff on the way. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.